What's happening here is so like what happened in the run-up to the fiscal crisis in Greece, because increasingly people were saying, can you pay me cash? And the only response that government had for that was to put tax up even more, which made even fewer people pay. Mark, hello, good morning. Do you have electricity?
I'll have to check Eskom's push, but I've got an inverter, and vital things like this podcast will never be without power. That's all I've got to say.
Oh, excellent.
Okay, so I've made reserves just for,
Oh, brilliant.
And missing out on a morning discussion with you would be beyond the pale.
It would be terrible.
Fortunately, we don't have eight-sided dice,
right,
or die as the plural of die, because I think they throw a dice, okay, because they threw it and they came up with a three,
right,
and we had stage three.
Right.
And then some guy said, just throw that again, I wasn't watching, and they threw it again, and they came up with a six.
Right.
Okay, now, fortunately, the third person wasn't watching, was watching this morning, and they threw it again, and they got a four. So it's got the bases covered here, but I don't know what the cause is, and I've given up trying to analyze or accuse or accept the cause. It's just it comes and it's going to come.
Right.
And we cannot applaud a fish for swimming as we do every time we have electricity. We think, now that's a good thing. It's to be expected.
Yes. I mean, I was actually quite relieved because when it happened so suddenly, I thought, oh, Kuberg. It's funny. It's just like, oh, big wave in Cape Town, a large problem. Anyway, so I was quite relieved to hear that it was Hendrina and Kusile and one thing tripped something and et cetera.
Same old, same old.
I mean, it has been an extraordinarily embarrassing week for our government.
As we host the G20.
How many things can go wrong? As all the foreign ministers of the world descend on South Africa, everything goes wrong. It's just amazing.
And maybe none of them get ill, because I hear now they're not sparing hospitals in these load shedding situations anymore.
Yes.
So I don't know who took that bloody decision, but anyway, they're just... And I mean, cancelling the budget is extraordinarily avoidable, you would have thought. Because no matter how much time you give Treasury to reconsider or the political parties to reconvene, I don't think they're going to come up with a better solution than they could have come up within an hour if they were pressed to make the announcement. They could have gone, make it 1% and we're going to cut a percentage of the costs. And because there are less choices for the budget than there are for the load shedding stages. Okay.
Yes.
I mean, here's the problem, Tim, in a nutshell. The load shedding can be done at the flick of a switch, and VAT increases can be done at the stroke of a pen.
Right.
They don't require effort. Yes. They are the default easy way out. We are not prepared to do any hard work here. We are not prepared to plant. We only want to harvest, and even if we eat stuff and it's green, we're going to eat it. And so that's the problem, is that we have this ability to resort to the quick fix, and it's the quick fixes added up that cause the compounded damage to the system. Take that, sports lover.
Yeah, I'm with you. It was so interesting. I've been watching budgets, for a long time, in a kind of quite long journalistic career. And what was amazing for me about this budget was how much I learned, on budget.
Yeah, could you focus?
Six gazillion that I didn't know. So, I think that one of the most revealing things was that the head of SARS, just 2 weeks ago, he said, no, you don't want to increase VAT.
Let's increase collections.
Yes, let's increase collections. But there's, 500 billion rands worth of tax, which is not being collected, with a little bit more effort. I think we can, sort of take that option. So presumably at that point, he didn't know, or he wasn't told, that they were thinking about increasing VAT by 2 percentage points. Either that, or they were thinking about it then, they were discussing it then, they just didn't include him.
It turns out that they're not besties. Okay.
Yes, as we've learned.
We should be careful when our mics are switched on or off here, lest we get found out for we aren't our besties. But anyway, they're not besties, as it turns out, and they don't have to be. But they do have to hold each other in mutual regard, one would have thought.
Yes, exactly.
Because it's kind of like in the same team, as it were. So, listen, I've always been a bit of a fan of VAT, and I'll tell you why. But not in addition to, but instead of.
Right.
If you had that instead of all other taxes,
right.
Okay, it would be much easier to collect, much harder to cheat on, cost an extraordinary amount less, and you could balance the budget every year by going like, okay, VAT needs to be 14.167% this year to balance the budget, and we need to zero rate, 12 items and all of that good stuff. The trouble is, you zero rate an item, it turns out the price doesn't go down.
Yes.
They go like, okay, we'll fill that with the price increase.
Yes.
I mean, are we nuts in this country?
Yes.
You know, we really are. We've got no common purpose. That's the bottom line. We've got politicians wanting to be popular enough to stay in power and therefore to plow money into what they think buys votes when they're wrong. And that's what we're missing. If we had common purpose, we'd have a simple tax system and everyone would pay their little bit and we'd prosper. And as you say, I think the number was actually 800 billion that Kiesweder
yeah.
said he could go and find. That's kind of a lot, eh? That's 40% of our total budget, man.
It's interesting that conversations you have with people, it's quite difficult to write, but I did have a conversation with a guy who is Greek.
An achievement in and of itself.
Yes. But he said it's so like, you know, what's happening here is so like what happened in the run-up to the sort of fiscal crisis in Greece, because increasingly people were saying, can you pay me cash? Can you rather pay cash?
Yeah, exactly. Avoid it.
Not paying tax just became very suddenly
the thing to do,
yeah. You know, a national sport.
Yeah.
You know, it became sort of like normalized. Everybody sort of accepted it for a long time.
Yeah, it becomes justifiable.
And the only response that government had for that was to put tax up even more, which made even fewer people pay. You know, then they put up the tax even more and even fewer people paid.
No, have we not learned about how regulatory imposition gets focused on as a target, not a strategy? I mean, if we go back to the financial round and the commercial round, all of the financial brain power was sort of focused on how to dwindle that thing rather than how to support it. And exchange control, the same thing. When you're wrong, the good people start going bad because they just can't abide your wrongness any longer. And that's, as you've nailed it, Tim. That's the ultimate consequence, is that we become non-compliant, anti-government. I'll tell you what the other problem is. It seems that any intellectual discourse falls on deaf ears in government. They seem to double down on each other and close the tent and not listen to anybody outside the tent, which makes them more and more ignorant inside the tent. I'm furious, man.
Yeah, this is why I think the national government unity in this particular case, you know, it could be a big wake-up call.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be a really, really, really good thing. Because, you know, they had a press conference to kind of explain what happened. And the other strange thing about, you know, the whole sequence to me was that the most important thing that was said at that press conference was barely reported. And someone asked, you know, what cost savings did you discuss?
Yeah.
You know, what? And the answer was no, they weren't on the table. I'm like, what? You're kidding me. You're putting up VAT by 2 percentage points. You didn't even consider where you might save some money. I mean, it was what?
Why do you want to eat salad when you can take a Zympic? You know, I mean, you know, I don't know. Maybe that's the wrong comparison, showing my medical ignorance again. But it's because it's harder.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
It's just harder, and it's not popular.
Yes.
I think at some point in history, they decided to make medicine taste horrible.
Right.
Okay. I actually think they did on purpose, because they could have made it taste nice, okay, but they don't. Because they want you to understand, okay,
that there's something wrong.
That this stuff is good for you despite its taste.
Yeah.
That they say that you wouldn't normally take this, you have to take it. And that's where we need to get to. We need to swallow some hard medicine here. Otherwise, there'll be nothing left, man. As you say, these underlying currents that are starting to emerge, some of which you've highlighted today, are cause for state collapse.
Yes.
They really are.
Would you settle for a 1 percentage point increase in VAT and some savings? Would you? How do you go into this?
I'd look for that sort of compromise. But the first thing is, I say, okay, guys, I'll settle for 1% or 0.5% or whatever it might be. But can you show me the cost saving for the balance? Okay. Can you make up the difference? Okay, so what are we short? We're short 100 marbles. I want this year 60% of those marbles to come from savings, from cost cutting. And then next year, I want a plan that says 75% come from, and so on. You have to, there are two sides to the income statement. And when you have a pen that can override everything, you don't have to focus on revenue.
Yes.
You just dictate revenue. Yes. And that makes you a sloppy business.
Just on the kind of international front, it was interesting to read this week that Elon Musk has sent this email to millions of federal employees.
Yeah.
And the email says to them, could you just explain what you did last week?
He shouldn't hold his breath. We can send a few of those out, but you won't have a full inbox.
Yeah. Elon Musk is a bit of a, think what he's doing is horrible, et cetera. I'm very suspicious of the Trump administration. I think it's all going to go wrong. I think a lot of what he says is just complete hogwash, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But this thing, I think, well, that's quite a good idea. I'd quite like to hear.
Once I was put in charge of a business operation, and the first thing I did in the morning, I said, I'm the new boss. You will explain to me what you do. And I literally went around to everyone's desk and found that at least half of them didn't really know what they were doing. Okay, and so I support that. The trouble with the Trump-Musk duet is that they do a couple of things that we support. I haven't found anyone that hasn't found something they love about what they're doing. But the trouble is, they're a basket of treachery, wrapping up a few good things in disguise. And so, it's not cause enough to support them. But if we could extract, like we can't from Quality Street, if we could extract those sweeties we like, it would be a feast. Okay.
I've always wondered what the Deputy Minister of Arts and Culture does. You know what I mean? What is the day? Just describe the day.
that would be a fantastic memo to get. What the deputy minister of anything does, because the deputy minister by design, it seems to be in all but a few portfolios, has been put there to give trouble to the minister. Their focus is not downwards on the task at hand, but upwards on white-anting their boss. I mean, that's the evidence as I've seen it so far. And one might argue that's the strategy. But all of this results in changed investment behavior. And, I see that Warren Buffett's cash balance is now $334.2 billion. That's quite a lot. That's almost, two-thirds of what Musk is worth.
Yes.
I also see that people are speculating more about gold than they were a few weeks ago about Bitcoin. What is this, Tim? Is there going to be a massive reversion to so-called safe haven assets? And what happens to the NVIDIAs and the DeepSeeks and all of those in this world? Is there a sea change, or is this just a sort of partial reaction, a little bit of a portfolio mixing up?
I do think a lot of things have changed really dramatically. And, one of the things that I was looking at this morning, which I think is so interesting, is sovereign wealth funds, because apparently now America wants a sovereign wealth fund, right?
Just define that for all of us, yeah.
So this is an investment portfolio bought with tax income from what might otherwise be tax income.
Okay.
And in some cases, it is tax income. So government basically sets aside a portion of its revenue or potential revenue and instead invests it in global stock markets or in global markets generally.
Okay.
It depends what they're kind of looking for, right?
Instead of, say, intermediaries,
yeah. Yeah, and it's basically done by governments that have too much money because, there are such things. I mean, it seems incredibly, we're not one of them. But anyway, so the one that we know about is Norway, because there's a thing called the Norway Government Pension Fund, and it has total assets of $1.7 trillion, right? And the reason we know about it is because Norway has extraordinary oil wealth and a very small population, and they don't need the money, so they decided to start this fund, and now it's enormous. But what surprises me about it is that, China has two. Abu Dhabi has one. The Kuwait Investment Authority has one. The Saudi Arabian Investment Fund has a sovereign wealth fund. All of them are over $1 trillion. So, that's just very interesting to me. It just means that there's a lot of money out there that is really there for the long term. Maybe that changes the markets a bit. I don't know.
I bet it's not managed by politicians. And that would be its virtue.
Yes.
Its virtue would be, guys, we as politicians recognize the need to have reserves and to build for opportunities as much as we do for famine. So we're going to get some private sector brain sets around the table and we're going to give them some of the money. I mean, if you look now, we had this gold reserve. Remember, we sold a whole bunch of our gold reserves to rescue us. And wasn't that a silly, bad, detimed move? As it turns out, a lot bad. It was a lot bad move. Okay. Not that I'm sitting here with the benefit of hindsight wanting to be critical, but if that lump of money, however it was comprised, was managed by professionals whose mandates were well-defined and who had some autonomy driven by the virtue of their expertise, it would have served us damn well, you know, and probably still could. What we do have instead is we have, you know, the PIC fund and the IDC fund, all of these other governmental things which are controlled by government, not by the private sector. And so they become obedient.
Technically speaking, the IDC is arm's length from government.
Yeah, right.
It's sort of caught up in the sort of government mentality mindset. So, you know, as far as I can see, the IDC has moved away from investing in, you know, making big thumping investments into trying to be basically so supportive of franchises in the townships. And, you know, it's sort of descaled. It's sort of, I said, going to try to help with solar projects, whereas the IDC was founded on foundational, large, mega investments.
Industrial development. It's in the name.
Yeah. Yes, it's exactly. And to me, that's sort of demonstrably been a bad decision. You know, you want the IDC to build an absolutely enormous battery, you know, plant, a huge, you know, new chip plant, you know, something along those lines, rather than trying to be kind of right on and, you know, invest in a little bit here, a little bit there. You know, I could be wrong about this, but I think it'd be a very interesting examination.
It all goes back to a question of mutual trust. I mean, we are not passing the ball around, the investment ball. We are not including everyone in the team. And if we think we can win a game of rugby by just having 15 wings on the field, we'll never get the ball, okay? And so, you know, we've got a mistrust. We've got a trust deficit between business and government, between, you know, all sorts of other divides, some of them past and some of them present. And until we get over those and recognize that if we played as a team, I mean, you know, sport is the one place I'd argue we've made great advances in that game. But until we take everything that we have at our disposal, regardless, you know, of its differences, in fact, celebrating its differences, we will be scrounging around with a limited skills base trying to solve a very complex problem. South Africa, demographics and economics and positioning is a complex problem which has solutions, but it will need to get us all there. And advice is ignored, and I can tell that from personal experience, and it's not about me. I know any number of business people who've taken any number of great ideas or at least great arguments to govern, and they've been ignored.
Yes.
Totally ignored.
Can I change focus to another large-scale, very critical problem?
Please do.
And that is the science behind smelly feet. Because I think this is an issue that affects us all, and we need to deal with it.
Tim, I can't wait to hear your personal experiences in this field. Have you considered the basics of a shower, say, for example, or, you know, going outside without socks? Go for it. Smelly feet.
I feel I should pass this on, because as a journalist, you get a lot of press releases. But the one that I got this morning, I think is just in a different league, just in a different class, because it includes 10 steps to keep your feet fresh. And step number one is, and you won't believe this, wash your feet.
Wash them. I mean, there's a giveaway. Okay. I can't wait. Go on. Rattle them off quickly, Tim.
Okay, go. Can I tell you number two and number three, and then we can just put this in place where it deserves to be. Number two is dry your feet after you've washed your feet.
Okay. I can't wait for number three.
Right. You need to put on breathable socks and breathable shoes, which is kind of interesting.
And that could be a challenge.
That could be a challenge, yeah.
Most people spend their lives in non-breathable shoes. And there are things, I think, on that list which probably say walk around barefoot, but not in the snow. And so there's all sorts of, you have to localize the set of rules that still apply. All right, well, I'm straight after this, I'm going to take my leather shoes off and go watch my feet and dry them in the sun.
Exactly.
Okay.
Cool, man.
Have a good week.
You too.